News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 20th of August, Anno Domini 2006, and you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, it's Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Give us a call. You know the numbers, 222-1180. That's in the 585 area code. Outside the 585 area code, it's 800-295-1180 on the Choice One toll-free line. And, of course, if you're a Verizon wireless customer, it's star 1180. But before we get to the phones, let's talk about what's going on in the world. Let's talk about Dell laptops. Let's talk about
burning issue
batteries. Let's talk about spontaneous combustion. Dell said it will recall 4.1 million laptop computer batteries because of a potential fire hazard.
So the few thousand Apple just recalled is sort of nothing now.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Under rare conditions, it's possible for these batteries to overheat, which could cause a risk of fire. The overheating was caused by a manufacturing defect in batteries that were made for Dell by Sony. Customers certainly can continue to use the laptop computer safely by turning the system off, ejecting the battery, and using the AC adapter and power cord to power the system until the replacement battery is received. But make sure you actually remove the battery. The firm has its own, Dell has its own website, https://www.dellbatteryprogram.com. That's DellBatteryProgram.com. And of course, there are no spaces on the internet. There's no spaces on the internet. So it's all one word, Dell
it's
Battery.
It's a percent 20.
Program.com. and so you can easily just type that in and Steve will have that up on the website. Not on actual domain names. Or you can call them toll free at 866-342-0011. That's 866-342-0011, 866-342-0011. That's Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Daylight Time, because Dell is headquartered in Round Rock, Texas, near Austin. They say that because of the way these batteries are made, they're lithium-ion batteries, and they're quite benign compared to the toxic ingredients in other rechargeable batteries with nickel-cadmium or their small-seal lead-acid chemistries. So the environmental impact will be minimal. However, it may take weeks to get the new battery or longer for out-of-production models. In the meantime, again, you can safely use the laptop with the AC power cord. Replacement batteries are not available in stores, only from the Dell website that I mentioned earlier. And Sony will share the cost of the massive battery recall with Dell. Now, the big important thing to remember is that it's not necessarily just Dell. It's right. Any company that got their batteries from Sony. I don't know if that's part of the Apple recall.
It could have been part of the Apple.
So it's happening all over. If you've got one of those machines, and at least on the Dell website, they'll tell you what models.
Toshiba,
and
there were
what
a
years.
Few too, but I think that was a quick and.
So you got to be very careful. That is actually pretty dangerous.
The interesting and disconcerting thing is this keeps happening. We want our laptops to do more and more, and we want the batteries to last longer and longer, so they keep packing more and more. You know, the energy density is increasing.
Right.
And every couple of years, every company runs into this recall problem. We're trying to pack too much power into too small a space, and something goes wrong.
Right, right.
So if everyone just gets a really, really long extension cord.
Yeah. Or we finally get Mr. Fusion working.
Yeah.
All right. Our first caller, Chuck, in Webster, New York. Welcome, Chuck. What's your question?
Question is, apparently the registries on my Windows 2000 Professional are not working effectively. And I wonder, in terms of I'm considering doing a clean install And I have an external drive, and what I'm interested in is not going out and finding my Internet Explorer addresses and mail and things of that nature and put it on the external drive.
Mm-hmm.
That would be protected if I have to do a clean install. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, how do I find them?
Well, a lot
on
of
the Windows Explorer?
The bookmarks are labeled just that, bookmarks. You can do a search on that file.
And,
you know,
bookmarks.html.
Yeah, and copy that off to your external hard drive. As far as the emails and all those things, you can export those out to a file using uh-huh. Outlook Express.
Well, that's assuming your Windows currently works.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was able to get it back up, but it started all with HP printer.
Mm-hmm.
I went to update the drivers, and it didn't work. And then I saw one of their utilities that said, if the install doesn't work, use this.
Mm-hmm.
And since I've used that, not only can I get to the printer, it's affected a lot of other things, and my external drives. And what happened, I tried to use the repair disk, you know, use the original disk
mm-hmm.
CD that came with the product
yep.
in a repair mode.
Yep.
And I didn't realize at the time when I went out, it looked like it was booting, you know, from the CD. That would be the first thing, and then it would go to the hard drive. Well, what happened is I didn't know at the time, but my CD wasn't working, so it booted from the hard drive. And when I went through the repairs, it didn't repair things. Mm-hmm. And the next time I did it, it hung on config sys.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to go back out again and then use the try to go and find.
Yeah, well, what you want
to
do.
Windows 2000 is very tricky to troubleshoot problems like that because a lot of the tools that XP and even 98 had aren't there, like MSConfig and things.
Yeah, and you might have a bad hard drive. You know, I mean, you might want to do some diagnostics on
yeah.
that and then try redoing, reinstall it fresh, but export all those things out
okay.
to, you know, the hard drive, and you should be all set.
All right. Good luck, Chuck. That's one of the reasons we tell people they should definitely
back up.
And I can't stress that enough.
Yeah.
If you can set up some sort of routine for yourself, if you if your mail is that important to you, export it every day. Put it on a thumb drive at least. Export your bookmarks every day. You can create a batch file that does that for you.
Yeah.
Something will go wrong with your computer, and you will lose data.
It's just a matter of time.
Yes. That is the only guarantee. Steve is right. It's not if, it's when. And so you, please, folks, back up. It's the only important thing you can do on your computer. It's the most important thing. Listen, we're going to take a quick break, but we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Dan Cole, with me, Nick Francesco, and let's see, who else? Oh, you, each and every one of you, on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
If it's some more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And you're listening to Soundbites at 22 minutes after the hour. Before we get back to the phones, Microsoft has some problems with their operating system. We know that. And so once a month, whether they need it or not, they release security patches. This month, they released a critical security patch that was causing a bunch of problems. Now they've released a fix for the bug in the security patch that fixed the bug in the operating system from the bug.
Now, wait a minute, though. I got to ask you, is that for the original Windows or is this for Vista?
Oh, no. This particular one is for Windows Server 2003 users.
Well, see, because I read this other article, whereas now the beta version of Vista has to have a patch.
Right. They haven't even released the thing yet.
Yeah, and it's needing patch.
I had somebody call me the other day and said, what do I do? Vista's causing me problems. I said, where did you get Vista? Well, it's a beta. Well, what do you think that means? Beta means it will cause problems.
Yeah.
And if they had the beta, let's say, officially, they would know what to do
to report
a problem.
You'd know where to report it.
We did have one person call and say, but it crashed my machine. What can you do for me?
You erase the computer and start over again.
It's a beta. Don't expect a beta to work properly.
Maybe beta's too nice a word. It's a late alpha.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
But wait a minute.
Yeah, the beta will be the one they actually ship and we pay for.
Yeah.
How do you tell folks any clearer that beta, you know, that's the whole thing of beta is, and that's what we live for, was to try to get it to crash and break the machine. That's when we were beta testers, what we live for. And if you download something that is beta, I don't care whether it's the operating system or some new software.
Right.
Beta will crash your machine. Plain and simple. Get over it.
Yeah, the reality is, folks, don't call us and ask about beta software, including Vista. Until it's released, we don't know anything.
And won't do anything.
And even after that, we may not.
We still may not know anything, but you never know.
I don't know. Are you planning to install Vista?
on something, yeah. Eventually, I truly am, but it's not going to be my first order of business. Our next caller is Bob from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Good morning.
It's not about Vista, is it?
No.
Okay.
If it was, I would make another question up.
Yeah.
two questions. I'm fairly new to the computers. When you talk about backup, first question, after I do a document or do some word processing, should I always go, you know, put a disk in it and back it up or back up extra photos that put in the computer? Is that an ongoing process? And then number two, when we talk about recovery disks, what am I recovering? If I make a recovery disk for my system, what are the recovery disks doing?
Okay, here's the thing. Yes, the answer to your first question is yes. You definitely want to back up.
That's sort of the overly paranoid version is you back up every file as you make it.
If it's that important to you,
most people back up once a day.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Like if I put photos in there from, let's say, some really nice trip or whatever, and a week before I put in a disk and backed them up, can I just put in a rewritable disk and add
absolutely.
To that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Right. But going to your recovery disk, what a recovery disk is, and this is one thing, folks, if you're getting a laptop or any of these other computers right now, because this is a way for a company to cut back, they don't include the original CD or DVD that was used to load your machine. So they give you a utility that lets you build what they call recovery disk. This is in case you accidentally wipe out your hard drive or the hard drive crashes and you've got to reload the operating system, you need to make those recovery CDs or DVDs.
And it's only the operating system and maybe any bundled software.
Has nothing to do, and drivers.
Has nothing to do with your data.
Right. Your data is your own.
Okay. Right, your own personal stuff. Because it looks like when it's guiding me through it, it's just for the system and it's asking me to back up my own stuff on my own time, basically.
Right.
Basically, the easiest thing to do, if you're not talking about photos, a thumb drive should back it up fine. And you can write to a thumb drive 50,000 times. So if you bought a new thumb drive every year, you'd be way safer than you need to be. And you can do that. I suspect that most people's documents don't fill 512, wouldn't fill a half gig.
Right.
And if you do have a lot of photos or video or things like that, an external hard drive is the easiest way to back up. You can back up to the CD burner you have in your computer, but it can be long and tedious because you have to keep making 700 meg chunks.
Right.
So an external hard drive is really easy to back up everything onto. The big caveat with any backup system is it should be removable. Don't use a second hard drive inside the computer. Don't leave your thumb drive or hard drive plugged into the computer all the time. Unplug it, put it in a fire safe in another building if you can. You know, anything that happens to your main computer to corrupt it could easily happen to the backup drive that you keep plugged in.
Right.
So that's it's never a good idea to
And a hard drive will last you easily 5 years unless it is defective or you bang it around a lot.
Right, okay. Somebody also told me I can buy an external hard drive, just like a little separate unit, plug into my USB port.
That's what we're talking about.
Like that. Yep, okay. All righty, thank you.
All right, there you go. Well, glad we settled that. And please back up. I can't make that clear enough. 90% of the problems we get would be solved if people just said, oh, man, no problem. I got a backup of my documents. I'll just buy a new hard drive and reinstall Windows. Not a big deal. All right, listen, we're going to take another quick break. The great and mighty Glenn Lamberts will be in to do the news, weather, sports, all the good stuff. So you'll hear his dulcet tones in just a moment. And then on the other side of that, we'll be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Dan Cole, who's keeping us on the straight and narrow today while Rob Linton is off doing some rude thing to something.
Did we see him in the lineup?
I believe we did.
Oh, okay.
We'll be back. I'm Nick Francesco, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Hi, these guys can answer your questions. Back to more Sound Bites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 32 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites. Now, am I reading this right? Michael, we have Michael from Iowa? The state of Iowa?
Unless my hearing has completely gone.
I think we need to talk to Michael. Michael, are you there? Michael?
Yes, I am. I'm here.
Where are you calling from?
A little town called Clarion, Iowa.
Cool.
I'm also the guy that has that computer show list.
Oh, Michael, how are you? What are you doing in Clarion, Iowa? No, it's none of my business. You must be listening. Yeah, exactly. We won't use your known name so that nobody will be able to find you there. How wonderful. What Clarion, Iowa. How lovely. Is it a little,
what's in Iowa?
A little bucolic, pleasant little town?
Well, it's a small town.
Yeah.
I don't like the cities.
Yeah, apparently not. No. I take it you're getting us off the stream.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, all right. So and, the other choice would be that's a heck of a skip.
You're right. and just a little briefie, my show list is at tdurl.com/y. It's in a spreadsheet format. But the reason I'm calling is, do you have old equipment that Windows XP in 2000 can't recognize? Like, I've got a little HP palm top hand computer.
Oh, yeah. There's a bunch of old equipment that if you plug it in, like those old handhelds, Windows
scanners.
Will come up and say, I have no idea what this is. Scanners. A lot of those. Yeah, absolutely. Right.
Yeah. Okay, you get a program, example, Microsoft Virtual PC, or my preferred is VMware, and load your old operating system like Windows 98, activate all the ports that you know it requires, and there you go. You can transfer information to and from it. And if you share that particular virtual hard drive on your main operating system, you can transfer files to it.
You know what? That's brilliant.
No wonder we didn't think of it.
That's exactly right. There's no way it would have come to us. But, yeah, that's a great idea. That's a great idea.
Cool.
Well, the reason I tried that is I have some software on a... one of those CF cards, mm-hmm. and for some reason my reader wasn't reading it, so I put it back in the machine, said, now there's got to be a way, and I said, you know, I put it on the VM machine, hooked it up, and took right off, and I was able to transfer the files, you know, directly from that computer onto the virtual machine, then from the virtual machine onto my
main machine.
That's a great idea. See, that's where living out in Iowa...
Yeah.
It's big, clear country. Clears the brain.
You breathe in all the fresh air and stuff, and you're
not
eating
as much clutter.
And, yeah, exactly. That's a great idea. You know, I'll tell you what. I've been a big fan of virtual machines for a while. I'm trying to convince my boss that we need to get a big virtual machine in for people. What's nice about a virtual machine is basically you have one computer, and it really only runs one operating system at a time. But as we know, the newer machines can do multiple things simultaneously. So what if you could load multiple operating systems and run them simultaneously. Well, that's what virtual machines let you do. You run what's called a hypervisor in the background using a product like VMware or whatever, and then it controls the various operating systems. So you can run Windows and Linux on various versions of Windows and various versions of Linux on the same machine simultaneously and switch back and forth among them and let them all run at once. So you can be running something important that only runs under 98 while you're playing in Linux and XP is doing a compile, and it all works together.
And also, like with VMware, you can clone that particular operating system, and if it gets a virus, you just delete the clone and reclone it.
Well, that's really the reason I want it for work, because we have people who are constantly screwing up their systems, and I'd love to be able to say, you know what? Well, because they're working on, they're doing scientific or research stuff, and they screw it up. That happens. So I'd like to be able to say, you know what? It worked yesterday. We made an image. We'll put it back. You'll be just where you were yesterday before there was a screw-up. It's a great idea. It works way better than any sort of restore or restore points or any of that sort of thing. It's a great idea. Thank you, Michael. It's an excellent idea.
Okay. Talk to you guys later. Have a good one.
Yes, sir. Have fun.
I do.
All right. I wonder if he's our farthest person. Probably
no,
not.
No, Hong Kong.
All right.
We had that one gentleman call from Hong Kong one time. Ask us a question there. He was originally from Rochester, but then had transported himself to Hong Kong to work for.
And I wonder if he's our farthest in-states guy. No, we have. I don't know. We'll have to take a look. Our next caller, Mike in Buffalo, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Hello, guys. Let's see. The weather report is a blue-gray buttermilk sky over here. It looks like it's going to rain in about an hour. And
you can keep that rain, by the way.
Yeah, you guys are about an hour ahead of us, so when it rains.
I've got a computer I don't use very often, very luckily. It's an 8-bit KW7, and it's booting up, and, well, that's the motherboard. It boots up, it reports the right processor, reports the memory correctly, and then freezes and stops. And, you know, I get the thing that says, press F2 to get to setup, but it won't respond to anything. I was wondering if you could shed some light on that, and I was thinking of, clearing the CMOS on it, what would you suggest?
Let me see.
So basically, Dave was off somewhere in Iowa breathing the fresh air. So let me repeat this. You've got an 8-bit KW7 motherboard.
Yeah,
when you boot it up, it reports the right processor, the right amount of memory, then freezes. It says press F2 to enter setup. Pressing F2 doesn't work.
Right. Well, it says F1 to continue, F2 to set up.
And what happens if you hit the F1?
Nothing. It freezes. It's dead.
You don't happen to have a USB keyboard on this thing, do you?
No.
We were just talking about that.
But no, what I'm wondering about is, so it's not even letting you get into the BIOS or anything else. Now, what happens if you hit the delete key? Will that allow you to get in?
I wish I had that. I'm calling from work, and I wish I had the machine with me. But the only thing...
Not F2, it's usually F10. Computers
have their own keys. Yep. You might want to try reseating the processor and make sure it's in tight. Sometimes we've seen, especially in older machines, the and socketed processors, the heating and cooling cycles kind of lift
now,
it up out
it
of the processor.
Is it also clicking the memory, checking through the memory okay?
Yeah, the only thing bad with it reports the correct amount of memory, and the memory I've got in it, is the one, actually, it's the VIA 880 chipset, so it's, the memory's correct, the right type and everything. It does report it as 233, I think, 233 speed versus 400 speed, which is actually what the memory is. That's the only thing I can see, is that the,
change the memory on this?
No, it's the same. It's the same one. The only other thing it sits a long time unpowered. It just sits for a long time.
It could be that the battery is dead, but you should almost always be able to get into the battery and deal with that.
I'm wondering if you take. I'm assuming you have like two sticks of memory in it.
No, just one.
Just one.
Yeah, it's 1 gig.
See, I'm wondering if it's getting hung up there.
Has this thing been sitting out of the motherboard of the case just? You say you talked about the motherboard. Has it always been in a case, or did you have it out of a case?
It's always been in the case, but the case gets moved around. You know, it's more like a toy.
I make sure everything is seated, reseat everything in the system.
Double check the seating on the memory, because that's where I think it's getting locked.
If it hasn't been on for a long time, one thing you might want to do is get a can of air and blow in all of the sockets to see that you've got it clear of dust and stuff.
I would check it and then let it dry out again.
And then replace the memory if you can and see what you can do with that, see if you can get a different type
of memory.
I'll
try that, because I've got other memory that should, you know, will be exactly the same.
Yeah, that's probably your best bet. Try that. Let us know what happens. I'd be interested in knowing what the resolution to that is. One thing about us is we always like to know whether or not anything we say ever works. That would be nice to know. People always call back and talk to us when it doesn't work. Very few people ever call back and tell us it did work. So we fly blind a lot more than
that's how we know what to tell the next person with the same problem.
That's right. Nobody called back. It must have worked. Yeah. Look, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Dan Cole, with me, Nick Francesco, and with each and every one of you, because at 42 minutes after the hour, you are listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe. You know what that is. Say it with me. All together now. Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
What? We're not sure what Sean Hannity knows about computers. But then again, we're not sure what the Soundbites boys know about anything but computers. Catch Sean Hannity later today on Wham! Now, back to Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And you're listening to Soundbites at 45 minutes after the hour. Before we get back to the phones, digital passports. American travelers have begun receiving a new RFID, radio frequency identification, or RFID-equipped electronic passport. That started about the middle of this month. The State Department said it plans to issue tourist e-passports at all of its domestic passport agencies by the end of 2006. The State Department has two primary reasons for moving to digital passports. The first is security, and the second is convenience of travel. The new e-passport should make life a little easier for travelers. The e-passport provides greater protection against data alteration than the current non-electronic passport. By means of a digital signature, the RFID chip has been redesigned. The covers of the passport are now made of a metallized substance that prevents reading the RFID chip when the cover is closed. Still, critics worry that the information on the e-passport can be compromised. That information is accessible through RFID technology and could pose problems for those carrying it. The biggest worry that the Electronic Privacy Information Center has is that the RFID technology could easily identify American citizens. Right now, just about the only people carrying the RFID passports will be Americans. And so if you detect an RFID passport, you know there's an American there.
I don't think there's any danger of not recognizing Americans abroad.
Yeah, there is that. Yeah, that's really true. As the RFID readers get better, it may subject people to vulnerabilities. It's almost like an experiment, they said, that people are going to live. People do not have an option as to whether or not they should carry such a passport. Those of us who have really studied RFID really don't necessarily think it's the best solution for that sort of thing, because once somebody reads your chip, they're you. They're done. They own you. So right now, they only have a 7 to 12-inch radius, they say. But that's just because you need the way the things are built, you would just need a much more sensitive reader to catch them at a farther distance. Well, if I'm standing behind you in line, let's say, and I've got a reader stuck up my sleeve, I can easily get my hand within 7 to 12 inches of your passport when you open it. And now I own you. I am you, as far as everybody is concerned. So that's an interesting problem that they're going to have to work out. But I'll tell you what, I'm not renewing my passport anytime soon. Not if I'm going to have to go digital on it. It's just not happening. No. I don't care. I'll stay here. Our next caller is Bob in Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Good morning. I have an HP printer. And when I take a hard copy document and I scan it on the printer, I have certain software on my PC that I can scan it into either Microsoft Word, Paint,
right,
HP, you know, document viewer, WordPad, copy clipboard, things like that.
Right.
When I scan that in and use any one of those programs, it alters the data that's scanned. So I'm wondering if there's anybody there that can offer an OCR software.
Define alter. What do you mean it alters them?
The formatting of it. If I have certain columns on a document, everything, you know, is perfectly lined up on the hard copy, and I scan it into the HP printer, either the letters, like if I use Microsoft Word, it'll like blow the letters up huge, or if I use Paint, it'll do that, and it'll alter the columns. So I tried to.
That's the problem. You're misinterpreting what OCR does. OCR is optical character recognition. It captures the text. If you wanted to capture the formatting of the text, that's a completely different program.
Yeah. Your best bet to maintain formatting is to an integrity of the document. If you don't ever want to change it again, your best way to do that is to import it in as a PDF document or a graphic.
That's what I did. I was able to use Adobe Reader, and it reads it fine. It doesn't alter at all, but I can't edit it. So I called Adobe, and I said, if I purchase your Adobe Acrobat 7.0 standard software, does it have some kind of OCR software built into it so that I can make a couple changes to that document, like letters or numbers, and then save it and then reprint it on my printer again? And they couldn't guarantee me that.
Right,
even
because you don't want OCR. OCR is just optical character recognition. You're getting OCR when it recognizes the characters.
But here's,
you want format recognition. So you need a higher-level program, probably something like OmniPage Pro, which is $500 or $600.
Or right. If you do read it in as a PDF and then save it as a PDF, and then you get a product like OpenOffice that can read PDFs.
Yeah, but you can't edit PDFs.
No, you can't. Even that won't edit a PDF. No.
I thought if you opened it up in...
No.
Won't let you?
Nope.
Bummer.
Yeah.
So OpenOffice is no good?
That won't edit PDFs at all easily, no. Really, the problem you have is that nothing will pull it in, give you exactly the formatting that you had on the paper, and then allow you to edit it. There just isn't anything like that.
There's stuff that will get close. Yeah, the best closest program you're going to find is OmniPage Professional, which is $500.
Yeah.
How do I find that software?
It's from a company called Nuance.
Nuance.
Right.
Nuance.com.
Used to be ScanSoft, used to be OmniPage.
Right. But I believe it's just nuance.com.
Yeah.
Hold on, let me look that up.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, that's what you need. Nuance.com.
They do have a demo you can download, too.
All right, thank you.
Give that a try and see what happens.
We're
going to take another quick break because it's time. I think it's time, personally, to take another quick break. I think you've had enough of us. You need some of the little economic dramas that are always available here on Wham. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Dan Cole. For those hundreds of you who have called in wondering where Rob is, Dan mentioned earlier that every once in a while, Rob just likes to take a day off and lie in bed and cry to himself silently about having to actually do this show. So at 51 minutes after the hour, I'm Nick Francesco. You're listening to the great... I am going to hear from Rob about this. You're listening to the greatest computer show.
Oh, he's not listening.
He's not listening. He's crying. Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Soundbites, America's longest running computer show on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I don't cry.
And you know, Dan Cole does not cry. Big boys don't cry. All right. It's 54 minutes after the hour, and we need to talk about the XSAN file system. This is a file system from Apple Computer, and there is a security hole in it. I know Mac people don't have security holes, but Apple apparently thinks you do. On August 17th, Apple issued a security patch for its XSAN file system 1.4 to patch a serious code execution flaw in the file system software. XSAN is their storage area network product. They issued the security update for both Mac OS X version 10.4.7 and the Mac OS X server version 10.4.7. Malicious users may be able to cause systems using XSAN to crash or execute arbitrary code, according to Apple's website. The company described the problem as a buffer overflow that could occur in the XSAN file system driver when processing a path name. This could lead to a system crash or arbitrary code execution with system privileges. XSAN was first introduced on April 19th of 2004. On August 1st, they issued a mega patch that fixed 26 different security flaws in various versions of Mac OS X. The Mac Pro was shipped with all but two of the patches that were included August 1st. So, Apple users, call me and hate me all you want. I keep telling you over and over and over again, make sure your systems are patched and up to date. There's no such thing as a totally secure operating system if you're going to ever connect it to anything. Apple themselves issued 26 security patches. So, shut up and patch. I'm sorry, I just...
Yeah, it is what it is.
The reality is that every operating system has patches for it.
Unix, I mean, all of them.
I patch my Linux system regularly. In fact, I got two updates waiting right now. I'll do those during the next break. But there's no system is 100%
secure.
Until
they get folks that have little time on their hands other than to wreak havoc, you know, and just find ways to destroy your machine, until those folks go away, you got to constantly... Update.
Right.
And it doesn't matter what OS.
You know, that's one thing I got to say the Windows people have over the Mac and Linux people. They're humbler. They know their operating systems have problems, and they fix them all the time. Mac people, Linux people, nothing wrong with my operating. Yes, there is. Patch it. All you have to do is patch it.
They just don't read the update notice when it comes on. They just click update.
Right. But the reality is you got to do the updates. And both Mac and Linux make it so ludicrously simple to update everything on your system. Just do it. It's easy. It's fast. Just click the update. Not all the updates are because they're adding features. A lot of them are security. So do your updates. We're going to take another quick break. The mighty Glenn Lamberts is in, and he's going to give you all the news and sports and weather and all the important stuff. That's 57 minutes after the hour. On the other side of all of that stuff, we're going to be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, me, Nick Francesco, all of you. So if you're on the line, please hang on. If you're not on the line, why not? You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180 or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And you're listening to Soundbites. It's 6 minutes after the hour. We're going to talk a little bit about what goes on at our website. That's soundbites.org. Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Every week, we do a poll. Last week's poll was, how long have you owned a personal computer? 382 of you voted, making it number 50 on the all-time hit list, thanks to each and every one of you. And it appears that the vast majority of our users are fairly old. Sorry, I meant are fairly used to having a computer in their home. 26% of you have owned it 11 to 15 years. 19% have owned it 21 to 25 years.
Well, someone owning their computer for 15 years could be like 17.
Yes, well, yeah. Yeah, that's why I said I've had a computer for a long time.
Yeah.
Only six of you have owned it for less than a year, and only 4% of you owned it 1 to 5 years. This week's poll is about BlackBerry, the BlackBerry device. Y'all know what BlackBerrys are. You can't Research in Motion's product that does email and all that other stuff to keep you in touch with the office when you're not even there. What's interesting is that Research in Motion has security protections for the BlackBerry system, and they're actually pretty good ones. But a lot of companies apparently are not appropriately applying them. You need to set up the BEZ server, the BlackBerry Enterprise server, whatever the E stands for, BES server, to do that. And a lot of people aren't doing it. And so, unfortunately, a lot of those BlackBerry communication systems are vulnerable to outside attacks. And the threat illustrates a wider issue with always-on wireless applications. While companies have aggressively exercised RIM security features for its back-end BlackBerry servers, those folks should be immune to attacks based on the code. A lot of users of this wireless communication device remain vulnerable. Many of the BlackBerry deployments are insecure and vulnerable to this sort of attack. The attack opens a covert communications channel with the RIM infrastructure. It bypasses the gateway security controls and gets inside the victim's network, and then they're right inside your whole network. Because the communications channel between the BlackBerry server and the connected handheld devices is encrypted, it can't be scoured by most network intrusion detection tools. Unsuspecting administrators could overlook the exploit, which could be used to steal private information or deliver other forms of malware. And BlackBerries have become fairly common in the higher end business world. So our poll is simple: do you use a BlackBerry? Yes, no, or huh?
The cultural significance of BlackBerries is getting to be kind of cute in the commercials for the new Material Girls movie with Hillary and Hayley Duff. Looking at it from a historical perspective of someone almost old, they're going out
the
for
first stage is denial.
Yeah, they're going out for a job interview, and the person asks, "Can you type?" And they whip out their BlackBerries, and yeah, we can type really fast. We can do 10 IMs a minute.
Yeah, yeah. What I find are I work at the E. Philip Saunders College of Business at the Rochester Institute of Technology, and so, yeah, and so I see a lot of hearing impaired students, and they're all about BlackBerries and Sidekicks and all of those things because they're all visual media. So there's a lot of that I see.
Yeah.
When you're done voting in the poll...
Wait a minute. Speaking of age...
As the oldest one here.
Thank you. Respect that.
Yeah, right.
I was just noticing here...
Respect,
you know,
my senility.
Oh, sorry. 2 more weeks. We're coming up on starting our 17th year, folks.
That's right. We've been on the air for 16 years and 11 months.
And so, 17 days.
And 17 days. So in just a couple of weeks, we'll have been on the air for 17 years. 17 long, glorious, possibly infamous years. But yeah, so anyway, when you're done, so we're very excited about that. We are the longest running computer show in the known universe. When you're done with the poll, in the little yellow box under there, you'll see, click on the Give Us Your Opinion list. That will take you to my website, AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com.
Be afraid.
Nice. Be very afraid. Very nice.
Good one, Dan.
Where you can actually leave an opinion about the thing. You get 255 characters, up to 255 characters. That would be fewer than 256. You can leave an opinion. Take a look around my website. I produce a newsletter 3 times a week. Except this week. This has been an interestingly busy little week. I'll be catching things up later today, but it was a long week.
Same with me. I only wound up getting up one tip. Normally, I try to get up, you know, a couple tips during the week.
Right, right.
But it was just one of those weeks, if I had a broom, I could...
Yeah, I don't want to hear that.
No.
Take a look at my newsletter. I put that out 3 times a week. Join my forums, a lot of neat stuff in there. And then come back to our website at soundbites.org. Under the links, you will find Dave Tips. You'll find the archives. You'll see a link to Dave's Security Tango CD. You'll see a link to my security blog. I do a blog on security. So there's all kinds of good stuff there. And of course, the forums where the niftiest people in the known universe hang out and play around with us. So enjoy those and do that in between watching the show. After all, let's face it, you can do that with your hands while you listen with your ears. As we talk, there's a good segue. As we talk to Lance in Rochester, New York. Welcome, Lance. What's your question?
Well, 2 questions on 1 problem. Brand new Windows XP on Acer notebook. Trying to run, learning how to run DOS programs. 2 problems. 1 in particular, a Apple Notice calendar program when it tries to print to PRN, and there ain't none. How do I assign PRN to LPT1 or maybe a particular printer?
PRN normally defaults to LPT1.
Well, it...
when you set up the printer in
Windows does not recognize it. It gives me an error message that there ain't no PRN.
When you set up a printer in Windows, one of the questions people just breeze by is, do you also want to use this printer with DOS? And it captures an LPT port for that.
Well, there's another problem with that. Okay, I could do that with my Hewlett-Packard Jet printer.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to use my old Impact printer, and I'm having a terrible problem with that.
Well, see, here's the issue. You know, things, you just can't do it anymore. I mean, it's just not supported because the newer operating systems are trying to get away from DOS. And this is what I've been running into, a number of clients that had old DOS, say database programs and this other type of stuff. And it's just one of these things, it'll depend. Depends on how old the software is, whether you can shell out to a DOS mode and get it to really run properly. All bets are off because as of June, Microsoft dropped all support for, you know, Windows 98, Windows ME, Windows 2000, Windows NT. So all those older programs, unless you're running it on, say, an old 98 machine, you're trying to use it in a new XP machine, it might not happen.
And a lot of times we're seeing people keeping old computers just to run DOS because they have this DOS program they need to run.
I've got a gentleman that's, believe it or not, I just moved over stuff onto a Windows 95 operating system.
And that was a big upgrade for him.
And it's doing what he wants, just to run this simple database. It's all he cares about. And it doesn't need anything more. So, just might finally hit the wall where you might have to look into another program and convert your database and that type of stuff into
There is no other program that'll do the job.
That can't be true. There's
millions
of programs.
What is it that you're doing?
It prints out my daily reminders, but not in calendar sheet form, just in a straight list with a few lines for each day.
Outlook will
and
do
I
that.
I have not found any other program that comes even close.
Outlook will do that.
Yeah. I mean, there's a number of programs out there.
Time and Chaos?
Yeah, I've seen a number of them. You can either have it do it in calendar format or, like you say, line item.
Yeah, if you want a calendaring system or just a calendar, there's dozens of programs that do that. There's a lot of web-based ones. Calendar, Yahoo Calendar.
Try going in. I tell you what, go to PC World and go and to their download and do a search on their database there.
Well, search for calendar program.
Yeah, calendar programs.
Yeah, well, every calendar program I've seen in years prints out a sheet in calendar form.
Yes, but many of them, for example, I do it in Evolution every morning. I print out a list of things. Says 10 to 10:30, do this. Underneath it, it'll say 10:30 to 11, do this. 11 to 12, do this. I can print it for a day, a week, a month.
Yeah, you may have to look in the print options as to which print format you want.
Right. A lot of them default to printing a calendar, but almost all of them will do what you want. They just don't do that automatically. You have to set them up to try that. Take a look around at what
World
you already
has
have.
A number of them.
Right. Take a look at what you have. Check the Mozilla project. They're going to be showing their Sunbird calendaring program this week as a beta. You may find there's a dozen programs to do what you want if you just look through the choices and figure out which choice makes you happy. Our next caller is Marty in Niagara Falls. Welcome, Marty. What's your question?
Morning, guys.
Hi.
Fun watching you on the show cam and hearing you on the phone.
Scary, Thanks. Isn't it?
Brightening.
Who's the little guy that keeps screaming in every once
That's
in a
me.
While?
That's me. I'm not as big or as hairy as they think I am.
Okay. Question for you is about Ubuntu.
Yeah.
You know, following your advice, I sent away and got my disk in and
mm-hmm.
thinking about stepping away from the dark side.
There you go. Move into the light. Move
in. And putting this on, I'm one of the guys that has the computer that's 11 to 15 years old, but it's still here, and I'm still using it.
Yeah, absolutely.
When I get the disk, the instructions are kind of limited, but it says to be careful, if you load this the wrong way, it'll wipe out everything on the computer. And
right.
I was curious if you had any advice when you go to load this.
Yeah, well, when you boot it up,
I'm going to say some of that is you know, cover your butt. That if someone screws up loading it and wipes out their computer, you can't blame the Ubuntu people.
Right. when you boot it up, there's a I forget the name of the application, but there's basically only a couple of icons on the desktop. One of them is the installer for the hard drive. And if you click on it, the first thing it says is, look, we're going to install this on the hard drive and wipe your system out. Are you sure you want to do that? So the important thing is anytime you click on anything on the live CD, read the screens that come up. Don't just randomly click yes.
All right.
So basically, it really is fairly simple to do. I forget the name, what they call that icon, but there really are only a couple on the desktop, and one of them is that installation program.
And be very wary of any message that says erase hard drive.
Right.
Don't pick it.
Yeah. Will it, like, when you install it, if your computer, like the one I'm going to try it on is an old Windows, actually 95 with a Windows 98 update, but will it leave all the other, like the CD-ROM drive, all that stuff alone?
You will be able to use, it wipes out all the software, but you will be able to use all the hardware.
Okay.
So it won't like, you know, save your email or your documents. So back all those up first. But it will let you use almost all the hardware you've ever had. There are obviously, we've talked about this, there are some old products that nobody has drivers for anymore. Because they haven't made the device in 15 years, so
it's probably in my computer.
Maybe, but if your CD-ROM, for example, is even vaguely generic, it should work, and all of the parallel ports and all of that stuff should all work. So, yeah, the nice thing about the live CD is that you can just run the live CD, and all the things that would work if you installed it work from the live CD. Now they'll be a little slower because you're loading them from CD. But you should be able to see and do everything you want to do before you make the decision to install it. That's the nice thing about the live CD. We've got to take another break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole sitting in for the weeping Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco at 20 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
It's 11 till 1 a.m. on Wham! Online, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And you're listening to Soundbites at 25 minutes after the hour. Real quick before we get back to the phones, if you're a user of Yahoo Webmail, you know there's been a big security hole in it. Yahoo has indeed plugged it. Nothing you have to do. They did it all at their end, but it's all fixed now, so you should be at least marginally safer if you are using Yahoo Mail. We're going to go back to the phones. We're going to talk to Jim, who purports to be listening to us in Louisville, Kentucky. Jim, are you there?
Yes, I am.
And where is there?
I'm not listening to you from Louisville, Kentucky. I'm from Louisville, Kentucky. I just kind of stumbled across your radio show driving across the state on 90.
Ah, there you go.
just wanted to say that you got a great show. I mean, it's very entertaining and quite informative.
Thank you. We love to hear that.
Appreciate
Thank you
that.
Very much. Certainly feel free to call your own Clear Channel station and ask why we're not on locally in Louisville, Kentucky. I love Louisville. I have relatives down there. Actually, my wife has relatives down there. I don't have many relatives anywhere that are out of the witness protection program, so I can't visit them. But she has...
On one side or the other.
Right, exactly. One way or the other, they're part of that. I don't visit them. But I've been in Louisville, and it's beautiful down there.
It is.
Yeah, it is. It's a great area to live, and especially to raise kids.
So laid
back. Yeah. It's nice. It's a nice quiet place. So are you driving through the state just on a trip, or are you? Is it a business trip or?
It's a business trip. I'm headed to Hartford.
Ah, and you'd rather drive than fly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Welcome to that club, my friend.
I'm not a big fan of planes.
What?
I say I'm not a big fan of planes.
No, I never have been. Even before all of this, I detest being treated like cattle, and I just don't fly.
And the thing of it is, though, is quite often now you got to even go 2 hours before your flight time. That just means you might get to the plane, and then whenever the plane might take off, there's no guarantee on even that.
No, I fly a couple of times a year maybe, and my wife really doesn't like it when I'm standing in line and I start to moo. I just feel like cattle. I feel like I'm being treated like cattle, and somewhere at the end of it, there's that big electric prod right in the middle of your forehead, and then they carve you up and sell you for steak, and I don't like it. At any rate, thank you so much for your kind words about the show, Jim. Have a great time in Louisville, and now you're our latest advocate, getting us on live in Louisville. What, Steve?
He said, did he have a question for us?
Yes, I actually do have a question.
Oh, excellent.
That too?
When I start up my PC, it seems like I have 10 million processes that start running, and it's really compromising the performance of my PC. And so my question is, how can I, is there a program I can run to see what applications are starting when I boot up, and also which ones are should I allow to start up?
Well, that's two completely separate questions. Yeah, there are a couple.
One ridiculously hard. Yeah.
There's a couple of ways you can go about it. You can look in your start menu under programs under startup, and those programs will automatically start when you boot Windows. Most of those have nice, easy to read names. You can decide if you need the HP, print monitor running if you don't print that often.
Or AMI.
Or, the AIM auto startup if you don't IM that often. The other section is to go to start, run, and msconfig.
Type in msconfig.
Yeah, type msconfig. One of the tabs there is startup. And that will list all of the startup processes that are running, but it lists their cryptic .exe file names. So you have to figure out if you need the one that says AOL tray, which is kind of easy to figure out.
Right.
But a lot of them are very tricky to figure out because they're 8 characters long. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can tell by what path they're in. There's a lot of semantic stuff that gets loaded as part of the Norton antivirus and security suites. So things that are in a semantic folder are probably okay. But a lot of those programs, you're not going to know what they are, which means you're not going to know if you need them or not. So
yeah, you can unclick them.
And see
if it does anything, wrong.
Or a program you wanted to run doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, that you really wanted, then you can just go back in and click it.
A lot of times you can also Google that .exe file name, and it may tell you what it is, and you can decide if you need that or not.
There is a semi-definitive list of the things that run at startup. It's at www. Well, you're not going to want to write this down. I don't want you weaving all over the interstate while you're trying to write this down. One thing you should know about our show is that we also have an archive of every show we've done on our website. So you can go to our homepage at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis needs us to remind you. And then click on the links tab, and then the very first link is the archive. All the old shows are there. Steve is pretty good about getting them up in a day. Sometimes it takes two. But he's very good about getting them up. So you'll get this. You'll be able to listen to this. Also, we have a list of all the sites we've looked at on the show. And that's also on the link list. That's number 3 on the link list. So although I'm going to speak this out, Steve will have it up on the site. It's www.sysinfo.org. That's sysinfo.org/startuplist.php. sysinfo.org/startuplist.php. That lists all of the programs 12, that can run at startup.
12,511 pages of information.
Yes, there are 12,511 possible startup programs. But the theory is your program will be in there somewhere. So take a look through that list, and you should be able to find, and of course you can search for each individual one. And it will tell you a little bit about the program and really whether or not you should just never touch it, or it's okay to kill it or whatever.
Okay, and then if you have time, I've got one kind of follow-up question to that.
You're from Louisville, Kentucky. We have time. Got nothing but time in Louisville.
How do these things automatically start up? Is it when they're installed, or is it something I'm doing to get them to start up?
100 different ways.
Yeah, them? Okay.
You could be. It could be encrypted into some software. Sometimes if you're loading updates or that from various programs or just surfing the web, they can get installed and slow the machine down. It's what we call spyware. And one of the other things that you might want to do when you're at our page is also look at the security tangle. One of the things we tell our listeners all over the world is to, you know, download at least, you know, have a good antivirus software on there and make sure that's up to date. And download and run Adaware and SpyBot.
Those, right. That's at securitytango.com.
And they'll help keep your machine clean.
Yeah. And the reality is every program you load, Windows itself runs 1,000 processes in the background.
Yeah.
Every program runs processes in the background. One of the problems with Windows itself is that Microsoft, I think, artificially lowers the amount of the hardware that's really required to run Windows. They tell you, you know, 128 mega RAM or 256 mega RAM. I say you really can't run Windows with a lot less than a gig of RAM anymore. You can't run it with less than a gig and a half processor, and more is better. You need a fast and big hard drive. And even at that, you're going to be spending a lot of time tweaking the system. The reality is the price of poker keeps going up. And every time they release a new version of Windows, every time they put out a fix, every time they, quote, enhance, unquote, the operating system, you need more machine to run it. Wait till you get to Vista. You're going to think you're running a VIC-20. Really, you want at least a 2-gig processor, at least 2 gig of RAM. Your machine...
200-gig hard drive.
200-gig hard drive. Your video card is not good enough. It's just going to be ridiculous.
One other thing I want to tell them, though, is in case you say you enjoy this show, just want to let you know that if you know you can't get it locally down there, that you can go to 1180, or it's
wham1180.com.
And every Sunday, you can click on the live feed and hear us right from your computer live.
Because we do
a live stream from 11 to 1 every Sunday. So tell your friends when you're down there. And kind of pass the word on, and who knows, maybe you can get the Clear Channel down there eventually to carry us down there.
At the very least, start your own Soundbites fan club and listen online every week.
Because we've been doing this for coming up on to, we're starting our 17th year.
Wow.
Are you kidding? There's even a drinking game. Thanks.
All right, guys. Thanks for answering my question.
Hey,
I
you
really
were
appreciate it.
Thank you, Jim. Have a safe trip.
You do the same. All right. Well, you're not driving where,
yeah.
but have a nice day.
Will, thank you very much.
Take it easy.
How cool is that? The guy's just driving through the state and randomly wandering around the dial and is caught by us like a fly in a
shock.
No, maybe
in.
That's not the best way to put that. But
we're very entertaining.
We're just having too much fun, and apparently it's contagious. Jim, drive safely, drive carefully, and don't fly if you can avoid it. Our next, we're going to take. Oh, looks like we're in the middle of taking a break. That's what that music. I just thought it was the voices all singing together. Finally,
coming
but apparently,
in harmony.
Apparently, it means that it's time for us to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, at 35 minutes after the hour, with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Dan Cole, with me, Nick Francesco, with each and every one of you, whether you're sitting at your radio, sitting in front of your computer, or just driving randomly through the state, possibly one step ahead of the law like Jim. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Back to Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
That was still so cool.
And the 39 minutes after the hour. Yeah. Yeah, from Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah, just drive through the state.
Randomly found us.
Cool.
I think that's so cool. All right, before we get back to the phones, AOL has their own antivirus software. Most people... You all right? I didn't mean to catch you unawares. Don't you read these things when I send them to you before you get
them? Yes, and that's why I'm all choked up.
Yeah, exactly. AOL antivirus software has been slammed by consumer advocates, privacy people, adware haters, just about everybody. AOL's had their problems. Just last week, AOL published the details of searches by hundreds of thousands of their subscribers.
Time out here, Phil. First of all, AOL trying to do something that they're not good at doing. That's the only polite way to put it.
Well, that's dang near everything.
I mean, you know, it's like Gates, same with him, you know, trying to do so many other things that they're not. Hello, AOL is a great service provider and making GUI menus and all this other, and setting up the chats and all this other stuff to try to also get into the spyware and spam and all that control.
But here's the problem. They're losing, they're bleeding customers. They're just losing them left and right. And so here's this active virus anti-shield antivirus software, which they released last week. The problem appears to be the licensing agreement, which apparently authorizes AOL to gather and share data on how the software is being used and permits AOL and its affiliates to send email to users. If you go through the installation just as any normal user would, there's not the slightest hint of any advertising functionality or data gathering of any kind. But in fact, it does all of that. It has an optional security tangle, a security toolbar that blocks pop-up ads, manages passwords. It's free. You can download it if you want to. But the end user license agreement allows AOL to send spam, to serve up adware at some point in the future. They're not doing any of that right now, but you're allowing them to do it. It gives AOL much broader rights to collect information and share that information with third parties. It's really... and by the way, if you load this software, you agree that you will not load any ad blocking software on your machine.
Right.
So, man, I don't know. And in fact, the toolbar, that security toolbar, is based on a product with a fairly questionable reputation. An earlier version of this software, which is known as the Softomate toolbar, has been flagged as adware by a whole bunch of companies.
All of them
antivirus
are yet
products.
To see one. The Yahoo toolbar, the Google toolbar.
If you're an AOL user, kind of avoid that thing. It's clearly not in your best interest. Our next caller is Jerry from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Jerry. What's your question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Great show.
Thank you so much.
I have a new MacBook with a super drive.
Good for you.
And it is rated for DVDs, writing at 4X and reading at AX. My question has to do with the blank media speed. Most of the name brand media that I pick up in the store is rated 1 to 16X. And if you read the plastic wrapper, it says something about may not work on slower drives. My question is, does the 4X write speed on my MacBook constitute a slower drive such that the blank media won't work?
Steve?
How do you define slow?
Yeah. Well, if it's listed 1X to 16X, it's hard to get slower than 1X.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure what that
4X
means.
4X should. I mean, that's not considered that slow.
Well, I'm trying to remember. Years ago, when they first started getting up there, there was a high speed mark. I think was anything over 4X was considered high speed. But yeah, I haven't heard that.
To maintain
compatibility, you should always burn slower. If you don't know who you're giving a disc to and what type of drive they have, burn it at 1X or 2X. It may take longer, but there's a better chance they'll be able to read it, especially on an older computer.
Right. Generally speaking, writing slower means writing safer. So I find it odd that somebody would say slower media may have a problem. Now, they may mean, I don't understand that at all.
No, the disclaimer says that slower drives may have a problem with the new media.
Yes, that's true. If you burn it at 16X and you try to read it in a 4X drive, it may not work.
Right, and that's why you burn it slower and then everybody can read it.
Oh.
So with your 4X...
Yeah,
the 4X drive, the 4, 2, and 1X should all be fairly compatible. But a 16X media...
And then you hand it to somebody else that's only got 4X capability, might not be able to read
it. But you can only write at 4X to begin with, so you shouldn't have much of a problem. Where people really run into problems, if they create a DVD that they want to play on a regular DVD player and they write it at 4X, a lot of the older DVD players won't be able to read it. If you write it at 1X, everybody can read it. And you got to remember to close it when you're done.
And the problem is X is an hour. So one X will take at least an hour to burn a full disk.
Understand.
But that makes it most compatible.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you very much.
So one way you can, it depends on who you're writing these for. If you're just writing them for you, burn one at 4X and see if it reads in your player. If you do, you win. If you want to send this out to a million people, it's going to take you longer.
Yep.
Understand. I just didn't want to go spend $20 for media and find out it wouldn't work in my MacBook and then go spend another $20.
Well, of course, the safest thing is to use the Apple brand media.
Oh, please.
And they rate the Apple brand media working with the Apple brand drives.
Right.
Especially for discs you want to keep a while. You know, you can buy the cheap free after rebate stuff for just, things you're passing around and don't care if it's going to last more than a week.
Right,
but that's sort of the same with any media on any drive.
Right.
And when we had the Kodak guy in here earlier.
KPM Media was just writing about that for the newspaper.
Yeah.
I saw that.
The archival
paper,
media that will last 100 years.
And it didn't really say where you could buy that media.
They are working with different distributors to get it into stores.
Yep. Yeah. He's working on it.
There's a guy in town where you can buy a pallet full. If you want less than a pallet, you have to wait.
Yeah, right.
Oh, well.
But that's good stuff, and that'll last 80 to 100 years. But depending on what it is you do, if you're,
the
burning your latest
standard.
Copy of your home movies, you want to save them forever because that's your people.
Exactly.
But I would suggest that to be on the safe side, it's 1X. But the other thing you can do is instead of buying 200 DVDs, by the same, almost everybody sells a 5-pack.
It's more expensive per unit.
But the point is, this is a test. You buy the 5-pack, you burn one at each speed and see which one doesn't work.
Gotcha.
And then you know what you can do and you move on from there.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
Cheaper way of beta testing it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
No, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Our next caller is Mary in Mumford, New York. Welcome, Mary. What's your question?
My question is, today I had a box come up on my computer that says, this copy of Windows is not genuine.
Ouch.
WIG.
Right.
And it says, you may be a victim of software counterfeiting.
Yeah. Here's the deal.
It's what?
Here's the deal, Mary.
Yeah.
Microsoft has something they call the Windows Genuine Advantage Program. What they do...
And the only advantage is to them.
Yeah, the only advantage is to them. The idea behind this is that Microsoft assumes every copy of Windows is either pirated or registered. So if your copy has not been correctly registered, then they assume you are a pirate. They will give you the opportunity to register it, and that's what that thing is all about. Is your machine fairly new?
Yes, it's Windows XP Professional.
And where did you buy your machine?
I bought it from a computer store.
They should have registered it for you.
Yep. Yeah.
Not necessarily.
They should have.
It
depends.
Most of the time we leave that up to the end user.
Oh, okay.
The end user has to agree to the end user license.
Right, but once you do that.
Right. So on the side of the box somewhere, there should be a little certificate of authenticity with a 25-digit number.
Physical, the side of the actual computer.
Yeah.
Right. And that's your legal certificate of authenticity that you have a valid copy of Windows.
But here's the other thing, though. Microsoft came out a little while after doing this notice and said, oh, we screwed up.
You're right.
And they sent out, what was it, over 200,000... notifications to legitimate folks.
Right. So some legitimate users are getting this error message that they have an illegal copy of Windows.
Yeah.
You need to follow the instructions in the message and call Microsoft and get your copy of Windows authenticated.
They might just tell you, forget it, or run you through a re-registration where they'll get you to a screen and you have to type in a new code.
But you do need to do that.
Yeah.
You do. I can't say resolve later. There's two...
Well, you can, but the problem is if you say resolve later too many times, Windows will simply stop working.
Okay, so I have to hit the get genuine then?
Yeah.
Yep, or call the phone number and do it that way. There you go. Okay. We're going to take another break. Back in just a couple. Well, you know what? Wait a minute. I got to talk about this Windows Genuine Advantage thing. I understand Microsoft's need to stop the piracy. Apparently, it's a lot bigger than I thought it was. Our friend Andrew Welch from Ambrosia Software says over 50% of his stuff is stolen. And that's just kind of blows my mind. I suppose it's the same for Windows. So I understand their need to be genuine, but they should do it. They just didn't really educate the public very well before they started this whole campaign.
They were like a bull in a china shop.
And it just, it really is porking people off. At any rate, we're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on the greatest computer show in the known universe. And that's, as Jim from Louisville can tell you, that's Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
America's longest running computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
At 55 minutes after the hour, it's Sound Bites. Back to the phones in a second, but I got to say, this is a great story. Scientists at our very own University of Rochester have come up with a new ballistic computing chip design that could lead to 3,000 gigahertz processors. That's 3 terahertz processors that produce very little heat. Mark Feldman, professor of computer engineering, and Quentin Diddick, the graduate student at the university who came up with the idea, are working on this. The National Science Foundation has granted the U of R team a $1.1 million to develop a prototype. Gentlemen, let me go on record as saying I would be more than happy to test a machine for you. This sounds great.
Me too. I'll be the test.
We're going to go back to the phones. Tom in Rochester. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
I'm installing a new drive, new CD drive in my computer, and I'm wondering whether I should set the jumper to cable select, master, or slave.
What's the rest of the inside your machine? How are the other devices set up?
I have a SATA hard drive.
Yeah, and are they? Oh, you SATA?
All SATA's master.
There's no
yeah.
jumpers on SATA.
Well, so if it depends on the motherboard and what your hard drive controller.
Yeah, I would go with cable select though.
Yeah, most of the new devices in the last couple of years are all cable select.
Yeah, everything is going cable select now.
All right.
Yep.
Thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
Bye.
All right. Our next caller, Matt. In Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Matt. What's your question?
Actually, it's a correction. When you guys were talking to Jim from Louisville, you mentioned using msconfig and how it's a little confusing and kind of, confusing for people who are laymen in computers.
Right.
There's a little program out there I found called AutoRuns from SysInternals.
Uh-huh.
What it does is it acts like msconfig, but it's much more extensive. It shows who produced the program, where it's from, if it's verified, and it's got a built-in Google search, so you can like right-click on the program and then check it out.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Well, look into that. It's called Auto Runs.
Yep. I posted a link on the forums under Windows under a post called An Alternative to MSConfig.
Cool.
Thank you very much, nice. Sir.
Matt, that's great. Thank you.
That's the beauty of this show.
Yeah, it's my favorite part.
I mean,
Does it run under 2000? That would be cool because 2000 doesn't have an MSConfig.
I believe it does.
Let's see. Where's the screen? I'm on the page right now. Where's system requirements?
We were shown it by the Windows administrator at my college when we were doing a little hacking contest.
How cool is this? Looks like a great program. Well, thank you. You have just added to my arsenal. To all of our arsenals, I'm sure.
Yeah.
This is a nifty little program. All right. See, this is it. This is our favorite part about this show.
It is.
Nobody knows everything, but everybody knows something. And so we love it when people call in and correct us or enhance our information.
Additional information.
And I have to say, Matt, this is really more of enhancement than a correction. You said you were correcting us, and we're so rarely right. But when we are, well, we weren't wrong in this instance. We were just not enhanced enough, and thank you so much for calling in and telling us about this. This is the kind of thing we love. This SysInternals program. Steve will put this up on the website, and we'll let folks download it and play with it. Now we know nothing about this yet, so don't hold us to anything that happens
here. I'll play around with it.
We'll all play around with it and see what we end up with. Well, I hear by the music in my head and Dan Cole screaming at me and throwing things at the window that it's apparently now time for us to be done for another week.
Who's cleaning that window?
Not me. I'm telling you that right now. Dan, you're on your own. I don't even know what that is, but I wouldn't eat that if I were you. We're going to be...
Was that lunch?
We'll be back. It could have been last breakfast, yesterday's. I don't know. Anyway, we'll be done now, and we'll be back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Dan Cole, possibly the return of Rob Linton if he's done huddling in a corner crying like a little girl. And me, Nick Francesco, you are listening to the greatest computer show of the known universe at 59 minutes after the hour at Soundbites.
Levy, Freddie, and the...